Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Today is the day. Good morning. It is Wednesday, May the 8th, 2019. I am Carmen LaBurge. Welcome to Mornings with Carmen. What a joy it is to be included in your day today. Whatever you are doing, do it as unto the Lord. Whatever you are preparing to do, every single conversation is a conversation God is interested in being in. And you, as his ambassador, are the one to bring him into that conversation. So we're going to hit a few headlines here before we talk to Drew Griffin about what in the world is going on in the world. And he and I are going to lead off with a conversation about Christians enduring persecution around the globe. And the headline that Asia Bibi is now in Canada, confirmed by her lawyer that she is in Canada. Man, that's just such a good news end to such a long saga. So he and I will start there, but we're gonna hit some headlines from around the globe. But let me start with this. In Highlands Ranch, Colorado, there was a shooting yesterday afternoon at a STEM school. It's a K through 12 science, technology, engineering, and math school in Highlands Ranch. It has left one student dead, two students in custody, and eight others injured, a couple of them in critical condition in the hospital. So we want to continue to pray for everyone involved in this story. Let me just remind parents, kids are going to need, well, parents probably need it too, some assurance this morning as we head off to school. So let me encourage you to listen to your kids, be patient, don't just hug them, but talk to them, listen to them, encourage them to be wise, and encourage them to, you know, be on the lookout, but also not live in fear. We are not going to live in fear of the realities around us. I think it does give us a touch point. These kinds of experiences do give us a touch point with what people experience in war zones around the world, where they still get up every day and go to school. I heard a report last night about a refugee camp, although they're not calling it that, that has been set up by the UN in the nation of Colombia, just across the border from Venezuela. And a 12-year-old girl was interviewed, and she said, you know, I couldn't keep going to school every day hungry. I was so hungry, I was fainting in school. And so I think that when we consider the reality in which people are living around the world, just seeking to survive, and we recognize just the mammoth, the extraordinary blessings that we have here in this country, hard-earned, many of them. I'm not saying that it has come to us free. Freedom is not free. And the blessings that come along with living in our kind of capitalist democracy are also not free. They are hard-earned. I understand that. I recognize that. But today, I want us to be mindful of those. And I want us to talk to our kids. I want you to become a person today who listens to younger people. I want you to reach out. Consider today a kid that you know that's sort of on the fringe, a kid that doesn't appear to be well integrated in with others, a kid on the periphery. You've seen them at the coffee shop sitting by themselves. You've seen them, sitting at the end of the bleachers or behind the bleachers or under the bleachers. You've seen them. You've noticed them. And you've been too afraid to break through that veil of isolation. We are not intended to live in isolation unto ourselves. And we cannot and do not live in isolation unto ourselves, even when we imagine that we do. And so kids are impressionable. And so let me encourage you today to be a person who is making that impressing upon a kid. Reach out to a kid who's on the fringes and just tell them you'd like to buy them lunch or a cup of coffee. You could just start by asking them, hey, what's it like to be you? What is it like to be you? I don't know, because I'm not you. So what is it like to be you? Hey, what's on your iTunes? What are you listening to there through your buds? Who are you following on Instagram? What worries you about the world? When was the last time you laughed? And what did you laugh at? Hey, you got any questions for me? Have you ever wondered what it's like to be an adult in the world today? Many kids out there, many young people out there don't have anybody to talk to. They certainly don't have anybody who's showing that kind of interest in them
or in what's going on with them. So let me just encourage you today to be that person. Be the interested audience in the life of another person today, particularly a younger person, and just let them talk. All right. When we get back, Drew Griffin is going to be here to talk. He's going to share with us what in the world is going on in the world, including a conversation about the persecution of our brothers and sisters in Christ around the world, which is now described as near genocidal levels. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Joining us again today, Drew Griffin from Providence Magazine. Drew, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Carmen. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I'm celebrating that our sister in Christ, Asia Bibi, is no longer in Pakistan, that her, at least that portion of her ordeal is over, that she is reunited with her daughters in Canada. So I think that's a good lead into the conversation about persecution rates of Christians around the world. And so let's start with, when we use the word persecution, what are we talking about? And then when we talk about persecution rates, what are we talking about?
Sure. I think a good guide for this is our own State Department, who just released, they have a special commission there at the State Department, the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, that just within the last week or so released its annual report for recommendations for the world's most egregious violators of religious freedom. And, you know, they have a certain kind of category, a categorization, a kind of system to determine who is kind of the greatest violator of religious freedom and what that kind of looks like. That looks like everything from denying freedom of worship to denying social access to kind of the social and economic system based off of religion to outright like violent persecution, detentions, and even like, you know, the allowing of violence and death towards Christians. And so they released in their report a number of they have countries of particular concern is what they call them and entities of particular concern. They issued 16 countries in the countries of particular concern. These are countries like Burma and China and North Korea and Pakistan, which is where Asia Bibi came from. And these countries are listed as ones that need to be monitored, ones that need to potentially have actions taken against them. And there are a number of actions that the State Department can take to discourage their persecution of Christians and other people of other religions. And so that's, we're not just talking about kind of the way that we think of persecution here in the States of where it's like, you know, my neighbor's not very nice to me, or, you know, people on, you know, comedians are making fun of me at, you know, Radio City or something like that. I mean, that's, you know, kind of hard to listen to sometimes. We're talking about people whose lives are threatened, whose jobs are threatened, who are really unable to live anything that resembles a normal life simply because they profess a certain religion. And in our case, they profess a belief in Christ.
So, Drew, I had the privilege of actually seeing your colleague from Philo's Project. She was on Fox News a couple of days ago talking about this, Juliana Tomarussi. And so if folks want to check that out, Juliana gives wonderful testimony to this particular concern, and particularly in relationship to brothers and sisters in the Middle East. So I just wanted to highlight that in the midst of this conversation. I'd love to talk next about what's happening in China. And this is still on the religious persecution, you know, conversational front, but we're here, we're talking about a particular variety of Muslims, and they're called the Uyghurs. And so we might need you to introduce us into, you know, it's kind of, we know a little bit about like the varieties of Christians. We know Roman Catholics, we know Eastern Orthodox. We're beginning to learn about the differences among Orthodox Christians around the world and that they are distinct and that we can't lump them all into one category. We certainly know among Protestants, there's all these differences and divisions. We're learning the same thing about Jews. I think that the shooting at the Chabab synagogue in San Diego gave us an opportunity to talk about, you know, that particular variety of Judaism. And that was new to a lot of us. So when we talk about the Uyghurs, we're talking about a particular group of Muslims. It's a minority Muslim population. And so when we come back from the break, if you'll introduce us to who are the Uyghurs and what is happening to them in China, because I know the U.S. has just now strongly condemned again what's going on there. But we're going to talk about that next. Drew Griffin is here. You can follow him on Twitter at DG_NYC. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am talking with Drew Griffin from Providence Magazine. You can follow him on Twitter at DG_NYC. Drew, can you help us understand who the Uyghurs are and what is happening to them in China?
Absolutely, yeah. So the Uyghurs are an ethnic minority that live in China, and they are predominantly Muslim. So they're not. It's not like a sect of Islam. It's not like Sufi or Shia or Sunni, any of those kind of groups. It's really just an ethnic group, a minority ethnic group that lives in Western China, and they're predominantly Muslim. And so China, what China has done over the past several years is that they have, and especially over the last year to 18 months to 24 months, has increased exponentially its persecution on religious minorities in China. And since the Uyghurs are concentrated in a particular region, and the Xinjiang region of Western China, since they're so concentrated, the Chinese have, concentrated their persecution in that area where the Uyghurs exist in order to help eradicate the presence of Islam in the country. And they've done the same with Christians, but for particular reasons, because the Uyghurs are so concentrated in this one particular region, and there are so many of them, probably around 11 million or so in China, that China has undergone what is basically almost like Orwellian efforts to stamp out Islam. They have these re-education camps, which for all intents and purposes are concentration camps that they are collecting the Uyghurs into, where they are attempting to kind of brainwash the religion out of them to get them to denounce their faith and to basically just pledge allegiance to the state. It's a crime to profess belief in a religion in China. And so they are basically taking these Uyghurs in and saying, but whether or not you've known it, you've committed a crime. You don't want to commit a crime, do you? You want to keep your house, don't you? And so they basically brainwash them, and they use speech recognition, facial recognition, DNA technology, all to, inhibit people who profess belief in a religion like Islam or Christianity from accessing the broader market, from getting on planes, from accessing society. So this is immense persecution. And Christians, even though these are Muslims that we're talking about with the Uyghurs, Christians should be concerned, because what they will do in China for Muslims, they will soon do for Christians and Buddhists and other religious minorities there in China.
So we're talking about a million people in what we would consider concentration camps. And it's one thing for us to, condemn that and say that's bad, that shouldn't be happening. I'm wondering if there's anything else. Like, what do we do in terms of foreign policy? What do we do when another nation is acting so badly in terms of human rights violations? But on the other side, we would like to have cheap goods from them. Like, right, the advantage of being China's friend on trade is sort of our, hey, can I just sort of shade my eyes from what they're really doing to people? I mean, from a Christian perspective, like, I'm not okay with that.
Sure. No, I think what we do, and I think how we have to look at this is we have to recognize that, we have enemies in this world. The United States has enemies, and that freedom has enemies, and that it's easy to look through the goggles of economics and say, oh, well, everything's morally neutral. This is just about trade. These are just about trading relationships and our emerging economies, the two largest economies in the world. But I think it's important to realize that there are two fundamentally different worldviews that are being pitted against one another. And the United States, through its checking of China's power in the region, both militarily and economically, It's really important, I think, that we check them. It's really important that we view them as an adversary, not only an economic adversary, but an ideological adversary. And so we need to leverage the power that we have militarily. We have to leverage the power we have economically in order to affect them. Because as strong as they are, as large as they are, and as dependent upon them as we are, they still have their own weaknesses. And the greatest weakness they have, as in all socialist systems, is their denial of freedom and the free market within their own borders. That's a weakness. It's a cancer that ultimately consumes a society from the inside out. We saw it with the Soviet Union. We've seen it with other communist countries and nations across history. And so there's a little bit of just letting our values predominate, being advocates for our values abroad, and leveraging whatever resources we have in order to help affect their society and bend them towards freedom and away from this type of what is ultimately self-defeating totalitarianism.
Okay, so I would love to get your perspective on what's happening in Israel. Because I was following it the other night, and Robert, your colleague, my friend, Robert Nicholson, was there, and he was like live tweeting, and there were these rockets going over, these missiles going over his head, and the Iron Dome was intercepting them, and it was all exploding, and it was wild to watch his Twitter feed. Would love to have your just sort of on the ground, from the ground perspective on what's happening in Israel in relationship to Gaza.
Sure. So, our editor, Robert Nicholson, is in Israel right now and is posted. I think we retweeted it on at Providence Mag or at Prov Magazine on Twitter. This video of the Iron Dome, which is the Israeli missile interdiction program that they have. It's this massive system that actually intercepts missiles and rockets that come from either Gaza or come from the Golan Heights that are fired over Israel. It's incredibly effective, and it actually shoots missiles to meet the rockets that are coming over and blows them up in the sky before they have a chance to land on the ground and inflict injury. This did not stop some of the missiles, some of the rockets from Gaza that were fired by Hamas from getting through and killing some Israelis. The Israelis responded with airstrikes on Gazan targets they're in Gaza inflicting more casualties. And the policy of Israel up until this point has been a policy called quiet for quiet, which just simply means basically, don't mess with us, we won't mess with you. You keep it quiet, don't fire rockets, we won't, drop bombs on Gaza City. And Hamas, however, which is the political terrorist entity which controls Gaza, occasionally gets their nose bent out of joint, and for political purposes and in order to kind of increase their bravado and their own political standing within Gaza, will fire rockets and kind of attack Israel, and then Israel responds in kind. It's just important to note that this is Hamas is a terrorist organization. It's declared that a terrorist organization, that they do not have the best interests of their people in mind, nor do they have the interests of peace in mind. What's ironic, and I've mentioned this before in social media posts and whatnot, is that the big complaint among the international community concerning Gaza is that it's embargoed, that there's an embargo around it that the Israelis maintain to prevent further weapons from getting into Gaza that could be used against Israel. And so everyone complains that there's no food in Gaza, there's no medical equipment in Gaza, which isn't 100% true. What's funny is that Hamas, which controls Gaza, is somehow able to get into the country and smuggle into the country hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rockets, which represent hundreds of millions of dollars and thousands of tons of equipment. They're able to get that into Gaza. They're able to smuggle that into Gaza and kind of get that into Gaza. And yet somehow Hamas, the leader of this region, cannot get food, or doesn't seem to focus on food. So I often wonder if they cared for their people as much as they hate Israel, if the situation would be different.
Actually, that's a really good, that's just a really good line and consideration for each and every one of us. If I loved other people as strongly as I hate some, right? might so many things about the way we live together be different. Hey, Drew, thank you so much for joining us today. You guys can follow Drew on Twitter at @DG_NYC. Please check out what's happening at Providence Magazine. Great resource for you at the intersection of what's happening around the globe, U.S. foreign policy, and the Christian faith. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Carmen.
Absolutely. All right, I want you to imagine for just a moment before we go to the break, I want you to just imagine for a moment that your kids, your little kids, are running for cover. And the only cover they have in the streets of Israel is their little backpack. And what the considerations that a family has to go through, you know, to be sure that their kid has a ballistic backpack so that they can hide under it because their neighbors right next door are shooting at them. Missiles, not with gunfire, which, you know, again, we our hearts go out to the people in Highlands Ranch, Colorado, and the fear that kids were under yesterday as two individuals were firing guns in their, you know, in their school campus. But I want you to imagine that your neighbor is so nasty. They fired 700 missiles in your direction non-discriminately, and that your little kids were under their backpacks, you know, hiding. And so sometimes we have nasty neighbors, and Israel has some really nasty neighbors. And actually, that's one of the conversations we're going to have next with Craig Von Busick, the author of I Am Cyrus. So that's what we're going to be talking about here in just a few minutes. Let's take a minute to lighten up. All right, friends, welcome back. So the Bible talks a lot about Israel. We certainly know and recognize the nation of Israel today. In the Bible, at various points, Israel's a person. Israel's the chosen covenant people of God. Israel's a place. It is the land. It is a promise. We talk a lot about Israel because Israel is significant not only in the past, but in the present. Scripture encourages us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and we certainly do that. Some of us visit the Holy Land, but many of us don't really have a firm grasp in our minds what's really going on there. So in May of 1948, as the British Empire ended their mandate and withdrew from the region of Palestine, five Arab nations actually sat on the border ready to invade. And at that moment, David Ben-Gurion, the leader of the Jews, stood in Tel Aviv and declared the establishment of the State of Israel, marking the rebirth of a Jewish nation in what we consider the Holy Land after 2,000 years of exile. So there's a book now out called I Am Cyrus, Harry S. Truman and the Rebirth of Israel. Author Craig Von Busick is going to be here to share with us the epic story of Israel's rebirth and the part that we played in it through Harry Truman. All right, that's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So some time ago, Bill Arnold was the host of this program. He now hosts the afternoon program here on the Faith Radio Network. And if you enjoy the delightful humor of Bill Arnold, then there's an event coming up in Fargo that you don't want to miss. And I know some of you are saying, hey, Fargo is too far to go. But for many of you, Fargo is not too far to go. It is right there. It's right where you live. And or you know what? Maybe you have friends in Fargo. It's an opportunity for you to invite yourself over for the weekend. Because on May the 31st at 7 p.m. at Bethel Church in Fargo. Oh, gosh. And then again on June the 1st at Embrace Church in Sioux Falls. This is a two-night deal. I didn't even know that until I started reading this. Okay, so Friday, May 31st at Bethel Church in Fargo, if that's too far to go, then at 7 p.m. On June the 1st at Embrace Church in Sioux Falls, you can actually have some time with Bill Arnold live. It's called A Night of Comedy. It's being presented by Life 97.9 and Faith Radio, A Night of Comedy. And it's going to include not only Bill Arnold, but the other original members of the cast of something called Triple Espresso, which for those of you in the Twin Cities familiar with what that is. They're going to entertain with a night of unique comedy, music, and ministry. And you can check out more information and get your tickets today at myfaithradio.com. All right, so again, that's May the 31st in Fargo at Bethel Church. And June the 1st in Sioux Falls at Embrace Church. Go to myfaithradio.com today and get your tickets.
Does the Bible speak to the political and social issues of our day? This is Jim Darlow. To begin to answer that question, can we agree that our nation is in trouble? There seems to be a strong consensus that our nation has problems, deep problems. No one thinks the massive debt is good. Our national security has people on edge. Waste, fraud, and abuse and corruption are widespread. Civil discourse in governmental bodies is almost gone. The solutions can be found in the Bible, which speaks to every important issue of life. After all, it was God who ordained government. He established it and has clear principles about every major issue facing our nation or any nation. The Bible even uses the strong metaphor to say of Jesus, the government will be on his shoulders. Any fruitful discussion must begin with Scripture. This is Jim Garlow.
Hey, friends. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm joined now by Craig Von Busick. He is the author of I Am Cyrus. We have talked before about Craig's work. He has a book called Praying the News, which I love. You guys know I love that concept. I'm always encouraging us to be praying the news. And Craig has been here before to talk about that. But he's got a new book out called I Am Cyrus. It's now available. You can check it out. Facebook has a page up called I Am Cyrus Book if you want to check it out on Facebook. Craig, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen.
Oh, thank you, Carmen. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
All right. So it's so wonderful to have you here. And I think this is so timely that we're having this conversation. Obviously, I mean, you know, frankly, Israel's in the news every day. So every day would be a timely opportunity to talk about this. But this book helps, I think it helps people understand why is nation and then certainly how Israel was reborn. So just let's start here. Why did you decide to write a book about the rebirth of Israel?
Well, way back in 1988, a friend of mine gave me a cassette from Friends of Israel, and it told the story of Harry Truman and his Jewish business partner. And I had never heard that story before. And I thought, what does this Jewish business partner have to do with the rebirth of Israel? Well, what had happened is they had a business together in Kansas City, and it was lucrative, a men's clothing store. For the first year, but then there was a post-war recession and they went out of business, but they remained friends. Harry at that time started his political career. Fast forward, and all of a sudden this failed businessman, this failed farmer, this man who never went to college is stepping into the White House as president at the death of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, of all people. And Harry Truman has to decide a lot of major issues at that time, and one of them was what to do with the 1.5 million Jews who survived the Holocaust. We talk about the 6 million who died, but there were 1.5 million who were left in the concentration camps after the war. They were called displaced persons. And the army had done a poll with these survivors, and over 90% said they did not want to stay in Europe. They didn't want to go anywhere except to their homeland, Eretz Israel, which most of the world called Palestine. And so you had this tremendous pressure because the British at the time were ruling over that part of the world, having conquered it during World War I. They had made a promise to the Jews after World War I in the Balfour Declaration that they would give the land to them, but then they reneged on that promise. They said, you know, we kind of like it here, and this is a great military base and a stepping stone to our people in India. And so they were acting as though they weren't going to give it back. And so the whole thing fell into the lap of Harry Truman, and he was the one who had to decide, would the United States support a new nation for the Jews in their ancient homeland, or would they not? And almost all of his advisors said, don't do it. They said, we need Arab oil because we're probably going to be fighting World War III against the Soviet Union. And if you recognize the Jews, the Arabs are not going to like it. And so that was the whole pressure cooker that is behind this book, I Am Cyrus.
So I want to talk about the title next, but I want to pause for a moment and just, you know, invite listeners to just consider for just a moment, you know, who are your friends? Who are the people with whom you labor each and every day? With whom are you developing relationships? What do you know about them? Why are they passionate about the things that they're passionate about? Because this story, the story of the rebirth of Israel, hinges upon a relationship between two guys who work together. I think that, you know, Craig, that sort of brings the whole thing home to each and every one of us. Like, who am I encountering? I mean, because I don't really know exactly, you know, I don't suspect I'm going to end up, you know, in the White House. But one day if I do, the people who were my friends when, you know, I was just a radio host, right? Like those, like they are influencing now my thinking and my passions and the way that I feel about things. And
that's
so
right.
When the decisions of the future come, and none of us know, like none of us have any idea how God is going to use today and the relationships that we have today to bring forth his will in the world tomorrow. And that's really right. What this book is about. So tell us about the title. This is a very unusual title. So the book is entitled I Am Cyrus. Why?
Yeah. Well, just to finish out that story, that will lead into the answer to your question. Harry Truman is in the White House. He's getting unbelievable pressure from all sides, from the Arabs, from the Jews, from the State Department, from the British. And finally, he says, enough. And he closed the doors to the White House shut, and no one could get in. And this is when the vote was approaching in November of 1947 to determine in the United Nations whether there would be partition, whether they would give the Jews a homeland there in Eretz Israel, in Palestine. And the Zionists were panicking because they didn't know what Truman's decision would be. And so they were trying to get in. And finally, somebody said, you know, his best friend is Jewish. So they called Eddie Jacobson in the middle of the night, woke him up, and said, you've got to go talk to Truman and get him to talk to one of our key diplomats, a man named Chaim Weizmann, who was pretty much the Benjamin Franklin of the Zionist movement, a great diplomat. And so Eddie Jacobson paid his own way, flew to Washington, walked in the White House unannounced, and said, I'm here to see Harry. And the secretary said, well, you could go in, just don't talk about Palestine or the Jews or Israel or any of that. And he said, well, that's the only reason I'm here. And he barged into the White House, into the Oval Office. And for the first time, Harry Truman was rude to his best friend, who was like a brother to him, and said, I don't want to talk about it. And it actually caused Eddie, who was concerned, you know, think of this. Eddie Jacobson was one Jew who had thousands of friends and family who died in the Holocaust. And then he knew many who survived. So he started to weep. And Harry's like, that's not fair. You can't be crying in front of me. So Eddie's panicked. What am I going to say? And he saw a statue of Andrew Jackson on Harry's desk. And he said, Harry, all my life you've told me your hero is Andrew Jackson. He said, do you know who my hero is? Harry said, no, who's your hero? He said, my hero is Chaim Weizmann. He's an old man. He's come all the way to New York. He's ill. He's almost blind. He's waiting just to hear from you. He never did anything to you, Harry. He never was rude to you, and yet you won't see him? That doesn't sound like you, Harry. I thought you were a guy who could take the heat. So Harry turns his chair around and looks out on the White House lawn. He's tapping his fingers on the desk. And finally, he turned back around. He said, all right, you bleepity bleep, set up the meeting with Chaim Weizmann. And so they snuck Chaim Weizmann into the White House so that the press and no one else would know. And Chaim Weizmann talked to him, and that was the tipping point. And from that discussion, Harry decided, yes, I'm going to support the nation of Israel. And so in 1948, May 15th, Israel became a nation at midnight. And 11 minutes later, in the United Nations in New York City, the United States recognized the nation of Israel, the rebirthed nation of Israel. We were the first nation to do so at the direction of Harry Truman. So a year later, the chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Herzog, came to meet Harry Truman in the White House. And Harry said to him, do you know what I did and how I was involved in this? And he said, yes, I do. He said, you, sir, are a modern-day Cyrus. And Truman was shocked. He stood up and walked around the desk with tears in his eyes, and he said, do you really believe that? And the rabbi said, sir, you were born for this purpose. You are a modern-day Cyrus. And so fast forward to 1952, Truman leaves the White House. One of the first places he's invited to speak is the Jewish seminary in Manhattan. And Eddie Jacobson, his friend, introduced him and said, this is President Truman who helped in the rebirth of Israel. And everybody clapped. And when they were done clapping, Truman stood up and looked back at Eddie Jacobson and said, what do you mean helped in the creation? He said, I am Cyrus. I am Cyrus. And that's where the name of the book comes from.
Okay, so let me just apologize to our local affiliates. I know that you need a break. We're going to take one right now, but then Craig Von Busick and I are going to be back. We're going to talk more about the book, I Am Cyrus, and we're going to talk about what it means for us to understand what the nation of Israel is really all about today. So that's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
There's never been a moment I was not held inside your arms, and there's never been a day when...
Craig Von Busick is here. He's the author of I Am Cyrus. He is also the editor of digital content for inspiration.org. It's a wonderful website for you to actually go and, well, get some inspiration. He's an author. He's a popular speaker. His books include Nobody Knows, The Harry Burley Story. He has another book called Praying the News, which I love, co-written by 700 Club co-host Wendy Griffith, and a book entitled Seven Keys to Hearing God's Voice. He's here today to talk about his book, I Am Cyrus. You can check all of it out at vonbusick.com. You can check out the information specifically about the I Am Cyrus book on Facebook at I Am Cyrus Book. Craig, so we're talking about a period of history that may, you know, there's certainly folks who don't remember it. And then there are folks who remember it badly because of misinformation out there today. So what I'd like to do is pivot a little bit to help people understand what's happening today in the conversations related to Israel. Could you help us understand what was the original territory that was promised to the Zionists in the Balfour Declaration in 1917? And how was that territory reduced under Winston Churchill and then again under the British Mandate?
Yeah, this is the big story that people don't realize. The Balfour Declaration, you need to remember that there has never been an indigenous Palestinian people. There were Arabs who lived in the what was called the province of Palestine under the Ottoman Empire, but this was always Jewish territory going back now 3,000 years. So the Romans had pushed the Jews out of that area that they call Eretz Israel. We would call it the Holy Land. And they renamed it, instead of Israel, they named it Palestine. And that's where the name came from. It was basically kind of putting, you know, the whole conflict between the Philistines and the Jews in their face. And so they named Palestine after the Philistines that we know from the Old Testament and from history. And so the Jews always wanted to get back into the land. And so during World War One, the land was occupied and was overseen by the Ottoman Turks. And the Turks came in on the side of the Germans fighting against the British. And the British invaded Palestine. And in the midst of that, the amazing thing, Carmen, is that God had three Bible-believing evangelical Christians who were in control of the British Empire at that key moment. One was David Lloyd George, who was the prime minister. The other was Arthur Balfour, who was the foreign minister. And then later they added in Winston Churchill, who we know from World War II, but who was involved in the leadership from World War I all the way through the end of World War II. All three of them were Bible-believing Christians who believed, they were called restorationists. And restorationists believed that Israel should be restored to the Jews, and that when that happens, the Messiah would return. Now, that went all the way back to the Pilgrims, to the Puritans. It was believed by John Adams, John Quincy Adams, and even Abraham Lincoln was a restorationist. And so that was passed down to these leaders. And so that was one of the reasons for the Balfour Declaration. And so they promised the Jews the what would be considered the province of Palestine, which at that time was about the size of the United States state of Pennsylvania, and it encompassed all of that land. Well, what happened is that there were two Arab princes. One was a prince named Faisal, and he was played by Alec Guinness in Lawrence of Arabia, if you ever saw that movie, and the other one was Abdullah. And so the British had a problem in that these princes expected their people to have nations as well. And so they gave Syria to Faisal and they were going to give Iraq to Abdullah. But then the French came in and pushed Faisal off the throne. So you now have a problem. And Abdullah raised an army to go fight the French. And Winston Churchill at that time was over the colonial office. And he said, we can't, we just had World War one, we can't have another war. And so he stepped in and he said to the to these princes, he said, listen, let's give Iraq to Faisal and we're going to cut Palestine down the Jordan River. Everything across the Jordan, you've heard that word Transjordan, will be Abdullah's Arab Palestine. Everything on the western side of the Jordan will be Jewish Palestine. Well, the Zionists didn't like this at all, but they really didn't have any power and they didn't really have any say, and at least they would get the western side of Palestine, and so they agreed to it. And then when the British were given the mandate during right after World War I, which, by the way, was voted on as part of the Paris Peace Conference, in the San Remo resolution, the League of Nations gave the Jews Palestine, period. It was a legal document signed on.
Craig, I love this, and you and I could probably talk for hours about it, but I think that we will use this to whet people's appetite to get the book.
There you go.
Because we're going to have to leave it right there. So the book is I Am Cyrus. The author is Craig Van Busick. You can check out his website at vanbusick.com. But go grab a copy of I Am Cyrus and become educated about how it is that Israel became a modern nation state. And what it means for a nation to be born in a day, and what it means to continue to live in a very hostile neighborhood that is, you know, surrounded by Arab countries. Craig, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for praying the news with us every day and giving us this book, I Am Cyrus.
Thank you, Carmen. It's always a pleasure.
It's such a pleasure. All right, friends, we'll be right back. Okay, so we don't have time to take a break, so now I'm gonna talk for a minute. That is what Matt is telling me. And again, Matt Reynolds is sitting in this week for Paul Perreault, who's on vacation, and so I appreciate him running the show. All right, so up next, this is graduation season. It is upon us. Bill English from Bible and Business is going to join me. If you could give a commencement address, what would you say? If you were giving a commencement address tomorrow or this Saturday to young people graduating from high school or college, what would you say? What kind of truth would you speak into their lives? What do they need to know that you know? What are you afraid that they believe that that scares you a little bit about the future? And how do you want to speak into the lives of young people? I want us to each be thinking about that so we can do it. And I've asked Bill English to think about it in advance, so he's going to share his thoughts with us up next here on Mornings with Carmen. All right, so what is the value of the Bible? That's a question that I'd like to lay out there this morning. What does it mean to you that we would make America moral again? What are your concerns as we enter into the National Day of Prayer tomorrow? How are you going to be praying for the nation? And then what are ways in which you have an interest in seeing the church walk the gospel out in compassion into the neighborhood and community in which you live? Those are some of the questions that I would love for you to engage with me on. You can do so by texting me, 877-933-2484. Again, 877-933-2484. You can email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. Thank you to those of you who emailed me yesterday, and for those of you already engaging on the text line today. This is designed to be a conversation, and so let me know what you're thinking. Love your feedback and your comments, your thoughts on the show. And again, how are you thinking and feeling about the questions we're asking? What's the value of the Bible? Not in terms of a monetary value, but in terms of the value that it has in your life and the value that it has in our life together. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen, and when I come back, we're going to be talking with Bill English. Bill joins us each and every week to bring the Bible to bear on business. Bibleandbusiness.com is his website. And he and I are going to begin talking about the considerations that that we need to address if you own a business and you're considering selling it. And so there's lots of conversations to have in there as Christians. And so Bill and I are going to begin tilling that soil today in conversation. And then I'm going to talk with Dan DeWitt from Cedarville University. He's got a new book. It's actually a children's book called Why God. But he and I are also going to talk about an editorial that ran in the USA Today earlier this week
which says that the Bible gets it wrong, and therefore people who believe the Bible get it wrong in the culture today. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.